contrary to popular wishes, this is going to be the shortest podcast ever, even shorter than the previous shortest podcast ever.
Wow, and that was short.
The end. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Gary Morrison.
And I'm Alex Saunders.
And in this podcast, we are talking big news, such as...
something really cool.
Android's doing really well.
Android's got 100,000 applications.
The London Stock Exchange.
Yeah. Oh, that weird C compiler is now can compile the kernel.
Clang.
Yeah. Oh, we can skip Clang. That's quite a dull story. Interesting, but slightly dull. And there's one more, isn't there?
Yeah, the London Stock Exchange.
And there's one more than that.
QT's becoming modular.
Tedious, more than that.
That's it.
Guessing game.
That was it.
Nothing else has happened in the world.
That's Unity. What has happened.
Unity. But that's our open ballot.
There was something else. Oh! Of course, the last news story is a fantastic InfoWorld piece written about Nokia and Mego, saying why the heck doesn't Nokia just give up Mego and switch to Android? I think that's worth discussion. Anyway, also we have our open ballot in which we ask you and you respond. Unity is replacing GNOME on the Ubuntu desktop. We have our In the Hot Seat, and we have our Fortnite, and we have our You Dare Us. One of those may disappear given time constraints. You will find out. We will find out. It's a big surprise.
Amazing.
Don't forget you can subscribe to Linux Format, and trust us, we are slightly more organized in the print version. If you go to tuxedradio.com/subscribe.
Right, the news. Big
the
news.
Good news.
The very good news. It's actually quite positive news this month.
Positive podcast.
The London Stock Exchange has switched to Linux, and they're reporting absolutely blistering transaction speeds now, like 140 microseconds or something like that.
Twice as fast as any other in Europe, apparently.
Yeah, and this is by ditching a load of Microsoft.NET technology, which is, you know, the real icing on the cake. So
the real icing on the cake is the fact that a few years ago, Microsoft made a big noise about this.
They did, didn't
huge
they?
Huge advert about how they're switching to Microsoft.
Yeah.
And then they ditched it. Yeah. So that's big news, I think.
Didn't it keep crashing? Things go wrong with the Microsoft version.
I think that was the final straw, wasn't it?
But isn't Linux something of a standard in these places? It's used in lots of other places as well, isn't it? Not the same software, obviously, but...
I wonder what desktop they're running, KDE or GNOME.
Well, it's obviously standard components, but how they've managed to trim that much time off it. But
yeah, wasn't it? It was something like 450 microseconds with Microsoft.
Right.
So,
these things obviously make a lot of difference when it's money.
That's about, what, 3 hummingbird beats per wing?
But, you know, it makes sense. These kind of things have to be really, really reliable because, you know, one bug can presumably make a difference to billions in the market. So
Linux working. If we had a marketing division for Linux, then we should make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's where you want Linux or BSD or some super solid system like that.
Absolutely.
So that's good.
Or macOS.
Or macOS, indeed, which can never get viruses because it can't connect to the network. More news. Android. The Android Market, I believe is the name for their thing, is has surpassed
Market Share App Store.
It's surpassed 100,000 applications now. So
that's really good. What position of
including Angry Birds now?
They've got Angry Birds, haven't they?
The best news ever.
It's free.
That's strange.
Free with ads.
Ah,
because it, I don't want to intrude with too much pessimism, but it sounds to me so far like Android owners are less willing to part with their cash for apps than iPhone owners. Presumably iPhone owners are rich and have cash to burn, so they buy apps more easily, whereas Android they don't. So Angry Birds is free with ads.
Well, that's true. Your average iPhone owner sitting in Starbucks would like to buy applications to show everybody how rich they are, whereas your average Android owner sitting in a basement somewhere. That is true.
Can I repeat the old joke about iPads just once?
Go on then.
How do you know if someone's got an iPad? They'll tell you. They will. It's great. They really will.
So, yeah, I don't know how many of these 100,000 apps are like iFart simulator type of things, but...
Or viruses.
But, you know, there is a lot of...
It's really good. It's a lot more than you can get through Synaptic without any further messing around.
Well, that's true, yeah. And there's a lot of...
I haven't actually searched Synaptic for fart apps, though, but obviously it's something...
apt cache
search. There's sort of comparison, have you, Graham?
And there's no quality control, that's true.
Which part that's the best? Very, very strict control of Debian.
But it's good anyway. It's good competition for the iOS platform. It's good that you can go out there and buy a considerably more free platform and still have access to a huge amount of stuff, including a lot of emulators and the like that you'll never find
on
the App Store.
Battle for Wesnoth on there.
don't know, because that was submitted to the App Store and then withdrawn. It's on the iPhone.
Yeah,
but it only through some complications.
The developers essentially released their own version, didn't they? They put their own code and created their own license that would suit Apple's restricted licensing, because the GPL was incompatible
apparently
with
Apple. The SF don't like that. So yeah. And finally in the news, you mentioned this before, Paul.
Migo, it's a great article. Well, yeah, InfoWorld wrote a piece on Nokia saying basically give up. Migo isn't going to work. Isn't it time we switched to Android? And this is a very interesting proposition, because Nokia, as Graham will tell you, are still investing very heavily in making Qt work on Symbian and Migo and everywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible what they're saying is, screw it, you're throwing money away into a big hole. If you were to get behind Android, there's a lot of momentum there. As you said, there's 100,000 apps.
Yeah.
I believe recently it now surpassed iPhone and handset sales as opposed to profit for handset sales.
Wow, so we're talking like 50 million plus handsets.
And one in four phones in Nokia or something? It's crazy, isn't it, sales?
Yeah.
If they were part of that movement, part of the Android movement, wow.
Yeah, it would be great. And in fact, there's nothing really stopping them other than their strategy, porting Qt to Android. You know, they could do that. In fact, they support community people doing the same thing, because everybody's eager to get Qt running on Android. People who aren't obviously working for Nokia, because they want Qt running on Android.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a good solution, but they're just going to have to swallow their pride. I mean, I think it's something we believe as well. We've seen Migo running on mobile phones, and unless they manage to magically turn it around between now and whenever the first one arrives early next year, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Usability disaster.
In fact, they couldn't turn it around. They need a herd of prancing unicorns to turn it around.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line. If Migo competes with Android, great, but it'll surprise all of us.
I do wonder if someone at Nokia is saying, listen, guys, if Migo doesn't work, we're doomed. Are they aware it's getting very, very serious now, because their market share is shrinking, their profits are going down. Did they lose money this year? I think they lost money in the most recent quarter.
Nokia,
yeah. Really struggling. Well, because their margins are tight. They work in the tight margin sector, the candy bar phones, the cheap, free with contract kind of phones that cost £15-20 to build, whereas Apple's working in the very, very high 40%, 50% margin range. So if Nokia loses market share in that range, they're left with the cheap stuff. And it's like, I don't know how it works in the US, but over here we have Royal Mail, which have to deliver to the Shetlands and stuff for the same price first class stamp as anywhere else in the UK, subsidised by the government. Nokia haven't got that, so the minute they lose their high value ticket stuff, they're really basically in trouble.
I don't think it has really dawned on them yet, no.
That's
otherwise, things would
terrifying.
Change. I think I mentioned last time to actually speak to Nokia's CTO, you know, who's putting everything behind Qt and the Migo platform. You have to think, well, if that's as high as it goes, then there isn't a secret strategy to go back to Android.
There must be some sort of dark lab somewhere in... Where is it? Was it Sweden or something, wasn't it?
It's Finland, isn't it?
Mm. Which part? I forget. Espoo or something, isn't it?
Espoo, yeah.
That's Espoo in Finland, that's the one, yes. There must be some sort of lab somewhere.
There's well, some
engineers.
Yeah, you think so. You think that a company like that would have a lab.
I bet it's closed off. They haven't seen the outside world in years. So they're sitting there going, Windows Mobile 6. we can compete with this, I feel, lads.
Right, it's time for Discovery of the Week, which is now Discovery of the Fortnight.
Mm.
Mike,
renamed.
You've just had a swig of tasty caffeinated beverage, so your whistle is wet. Are you ready to tell us what you've discovered?
Yeah, I've discovered two things. The first thing is I came across the original pole position source code for the Atari 2600 versions. This is all
legally
6502 assembler. Oh, it's just abandonware. It's just a text file. Oh, you know, looking around. keeping busy.
Looking on to Graham.
But it's really good, because it's full of all sorts of crazy comments like, this just works.
It
trust
has comments.
Me. Yeah, next to the assembly code, there's 6502 assembly. This just works, trust me. Another one is, this is all very wrong. And my favourite one is just the word Doug with a load of exclamation marks next to it. Clearly referring to some developer. So, back in 1982 or whenever that was made, they had a great sense of humour. And the other thing...
If it didn't have comments, you put no chance of making it work.
Well, that's true, yeah.
There's 300 lines of assorted anonymous stuff, you know.
I'd assumed it'd been disassembled in some way, but no, it's the real source code.
The original code,
disassembled, what, from Pascal? I think they were writing it at the time, you know.
Yeah, and I also I came across an iOS app called Modizer that plays every type of chip tune music file under the sun. And I was trying to work out what exactly powers it, and I found this open source library called Game Music Emu with underscores between the words, and that plays like Spectrum, NES, Master System, Game Boy, Genesis, SNES music, all through one single library, and it comes with a little SDL-based player as well. But it's really impressive. It handles all these formats, chiptune music being music files that actually contain processor data inside, not WAV files or actual music files or anything like that, but the code that the sound chip on a console actually runs. So it's a really good library. I think one of the many projects I want to write one day, I'm sure I'll include it into that. There we go.
Awesome shizzle. Graham?
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
Interestingly, you know, I all love eye candy. Well, what I've discovered this week is a wallpaper background called the Galaxy Live wallpaper, which is a copy of the Galaxy background on some Android phones that is an animated galaxy that stays in the background. Galaxy Live wallpaper is a Compiz plugin. So I didn't realize Compiz could do this, but it's very cool. I installed it in Ubuntu, so I installed it through a PPA. You launch up the Compiz manager thing, you enable the plugin, and then your background is transformed into 12,500 little, what do you call them? Particles. That's word. Not clever. Okay, so your background is transformed into 12,500 particles that all slowly rotate around the center, and you have lots of control over them. And it subtly sits there in the background of all your windows, if you have windows, looking very smart and eye candy-ish.
So, hang on, you said this was on Android. It's How much copy. Battery life does that eat on Android phones on these 12,000 particles moving around all the time?
Well, I knew someone would ask me this, and on my dual core Athlon 64-bit CPU, it takes about 10%. So, you know, don't know how long your batteries last on Android phones. It looks good.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
That's a shame you never get to see it with your when you're using your tiling window manager.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Oh, well. Right. I'm going to tell you all what I found now.
Cool.
I found that you can use the MV move command in OS X to move all the old stuff from last issue into a folder.
Hey.
I know it's really, really obvious,
it's like POSIX in action.
It's
you have transferable Unix skills now.
Well, command line win.
You believe it or not, you could actually sit down in front of a Solaris box and move files now. Well,
you know, like she's in Jurassic Park. Hey, this is Unix. I know this.
Is MV in the POSIX spec?
Yeah, probably.
I thought it's all command line APIs and stuff, APIs for programming and stuff. SprintF.
Yeah, but it probably is more to do with APIs, but I'm sure there's some Unix single Unix standard or something for these things.
Very impressive, Andrew.
Yeah, the command line rules. I know like 5 commands now.
Next month, LS.
Whoa, easy.
Paul, you're fidgeting and looking expectant. What have you found?
That's just caffeine. I've got two. One good and one awful. One good one I found in the current copy of Linux Sawmat, which hasn't gone sale yet. You'll see it all in another week or so, I guess. It's called Rotter, and it's discovered in our hot pick section, and it's basically a recorder, voice recorder. That's it. All it does is a voice recorder, output record, anything that's going through speakers realistically. But it's very clever because it works like log rotate from Apache. So as it's recording stuff, after an hour, it'll chop, save, start recording again. So you can basically hit record and leave it forever. People walking by, saying stuff, informal meetings, anything like that. Just carries on recording and recording. It never runs out, So it just keeps on adding it onto the next files. It's a very simple little tool to run, and it works. It doesn't look too great, but it works. The other one is a depressing one because I was showing Mike. It's a Mac discovery, actually. There's a tool I'm sorry if you're a Mac user, this is all new to us. There's a tool on Macs called Automator, which is thoroughly depressing because a lot of folks on Linux say Linux is great because it's got a really powerful command line. You can do amazing things like chain commands together. That's exactly what Automator does, except it does it in a GUI.
Everything.
You literally drag blocks. You say find files that match
foobar.pdf, your search thing, then join them together into a PDF, then flatten that PDF to JPEGs, insert those into a Keynote presentation, and email it to someone. And literally a chain of commands, just go play and it plays it back. It's like macros for your entire system. And any app that wants to can plug into it, so it can register its own things. So I've got a program which takes screencasts that you can say, and then put this at the beginning of a screencast as part of an action. It's incredible, and it's basically, it does things I cannot do in the command line. One of them was compress images in a PDF and then save it back to the PDF. So open a PDF, high res PDF, lower the image quality down, reset it back into the PDF again. So it makes it creates low res PDF on the fly. I can't do that command line. It's probably some sort of magic image magic thing or PDF tools or whatever. But it makes it embarrassing, really, as an argument that Linux command line is so amazing because you can do basically the same thing in OS X with a GUI. So it's depressing.
Yeah, but
someone should clone it.
I like being able to show off my elite regex skills using the command. Yeah, but you make a good point, because although you can do a lot of these things on the Linux command line, the graphical apps aren't ready to be hooked into it because we've got absolutely no standards on the Linux desktop. Is it such a fragmented?
Well,
net?
It used to be. I'm sure in KDE Decop land, you could actually request what functions can you do through Decop.
Yeah.
And then it would tell you back, I want this, you can do this, and have pass me this, whatever. That actually worked. And that's obviously gone now as Dbus. But that,
yeah, and stupidly, they haven't replaced that functionality with Dbus.
Well, it was very clever at the time. You'd say, hey, K-Screenshot, what can I tell you? And it would report back. And that's, I think, the way the Mac thing works. It does literally ask the apps, what hooks do you want to provide? So. So it's a shame, and I hope someone clones it. But as you say, it does require some sort of unity.
It requires people working together on the Linux desktop, yeah.
Hold me, someone, that's not going to happen. And with that, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, our open ballot. Do you support Ubuntu's move to Unity? Plus our usual sections, You Dare Us and In the Hot Seat. And it's, I believe it's Mike's turn this time.
Oh, no, please, yes. Make it stop.
Mike's everyone's favourite, really. Actually, who is your favourite listeners?
Please,
open ballot.
I'll give you
a
quid.
Do you prefer Mike, Paul, or Andrew Graham?
Graham's sitting on the left today.
Am I?
Okay, so what is it now? What do we call it? Discovery of the Fortnite. It's time for You Dare Us, which is my very favourite part of the podcast, where 2 weeks ago, a little bit over 2 weeks ago, under 2 weeks ago, over, what a disaster, we set ourselves the challenge of using a tiling window manager for 2 whole weeks, which I'm sure we've all done with due diligence.
Oh, it was 2 weeks, not 2 hours.
Yeah.
I missed that bit.
Sorry. So I suppose a tiling window manager, for those that don't know, replaces those floating windows that you usually use with full screen versions where you typically use keyboard commands to switch between them and load up other ones. And in theory, they could be a lot faster because you're concentrating on one specific task and you can get at things exactly right. But it depends how much time you're willing to put into the configuration of them. Mm. I don't know. How did you guys fare?
I installed DWM, which is a really, really simple window manager. And in fact, the developer's personal goal with it is to never have more than 2,000 lines of source code in this window manager, so it's just a single binary. I don't. Maybe his computer can't handle anymore.
A rolling source code log. Yeah.
That's the most important thing for me whenever I install an application.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. for an end user, you know, there's nothing else.
But you know, it's a tiling window manager. You launch one program, it's full screen. You launch two, it splits and keeps splitting and so forth. And the thing that struck me is, I've never had anything bigger than like a 15-inch display, so I always run things full screen all the time, pretty much. So I don't really find much use in these things personally. If I had a massive like 28-inch monitor and I had lots of Xterms and IRC sessions going and things compiling, then I'm sure it'd be really useful. But as you know, constant maximize, then meh.
Is that your idea of a massive screen?
28 inches. Oh, yeah.
Have you seen my TV set?
Well, it's interesting you should say that about you always run Windows and full screen, because I do just the opposite. I never ever run a window in full screen.
You should try it.
For years, ever since the Amiga, I just like having lots of windows on my screen and totally unorganized as well. You know, I don't know what it is about it, but even if I'm just working within Abbey Word or whatever, it's just taking up maybe a quarter of the screen, even though I'm not doing anything else with the rest.
This is interesting because listeners won't know this, but Graham's got the tidiest desk in Fuxradar yeah. Towers by far, by a long way. It's very, very clean and minimal. Tidy. Well, it's
it smells of dettol.
Maybe it's a counterbalance for that then. You've got a super tidy real desktop, and so you add clutter
to it. He has got better. I keep telling him this. When he joined, he used to have a little ticker on his kicker KDE news and stuff. It was really proper distraction central. So he has improved.
But what was the name of the tiling manager I tried to start off with? I told you about it earlier today. Is it Awesome?
Awesome Window Manager,
I installed this Awesome Window Manager after Googling up one and not choosing the first choice. And it was terrible. Awful. I mean,
sure wasn't awesome.
Well, it's got a big following. But to get any use out of it, you have to spend days in the configuration file making everything just so exactly how you want it. And I just didn't have days. So by default, yes, like you've described, it ran everything's full screen, run another application, it splits it up. But it was I still used the same KDE apps I always use, so it was inconsistent. So with Copete, for example, the instant messenger, the contacts window appeared on top of all the rest. So that would obscure something and get in the way of other things that you might have been working on. But even worse than that, when it was minimized, I mean, it's not the fault of Awesome, but you couldn't see when you got an incoming message or anything like that. So I quickly switched back to KDE. KDE, which I didn't realize, has a tiling window manager mode.
Like in KWin?
Yeah, in KWin, in the window manager itself. You enable this in the advanced features tab, and everything behaves exactly like a proper tiling window manager, so things become full screen, add other things. And it's also clever because it uses KDE 4.5's new features where you can move things around to different quarters of the screen, and you have still some flexibility on where you put windows, and it scales nicely, and of course bounces, which is important.
It bounces.
But, you know, I really didn't like it. It was deeply unpleasant, so I'm glad to get back to my old desktop.
That sounds exactly like the sort of thing I could have done with, because I installed Rat Poison and did not get along with it at all.
I imagine Rat Poison is the same kind of thing. Has it got a graphical configuration panel, though, at least?
I don't know.
I'd have thought it would have, considering the amount of effort people spend on it.
There's a help screen, which is just a list of text, but there's no... It's like with a man page, where it'll give you all the list of the flags and the options that you can use, but you only ever want the couple of example commands. You know, it was missing that. It was missing it. Here's how you open a window and open an application within that window, which is all I wanted to do. But instead, it was telling me how to do loads of silly things.
How did you launch applications? Did it have its own launch menu and panel?
I didn't even get that far. I really didn't get that far. But I thought the same way that for example, GNOME, you can use you can go up and click on the X in whatever corner of the window you've got your buttons, or you can press Control and Q, and you've got that choice between a graphical way and a keyboard way. If there were some sort of slightly easier to access way of using it mouse free, like you found with KDE, that'd be brilliant. If you could override that just by going to the mouse, you'd probably save yourself lots of time that way, without having to wade through learning, you know, all of the crazy key bindings and stuff that you have to with Rat Poison.
Yeah, I think that's the big hurdle, isn't it? And they don't make it easy for you to know what they are. They make it impossible.
No, but I learned that pressing Control and Shift and Return launched an X terminal in DWM. So that was my starting point obviously. To launch stuff.
I was very surprised to see they redesigned that Rat Poison logo.
Yeah,
that's a shame.
It's got much smarter now, which is it was great before.
It was so bad it was good.
Yeah, exactly, it was a 2.5 second. I think
the old one more accurately represented what you're going to experience as well. Other people might be tempted to think, oh, this is so cool and shiny.
Where's the cool stuff to click on?
If you use it every day, I can see how it would be great.
Yeah,
really, really good.
Did you have a chance to try one?
I really, really wanted to use Xmonad because people in the podcast comments are saying how great it was, and I was psyched up about using it, but I've failed. I haven't touched one. I've barely had a free minute in the last 2 weeks. So I fail. I suck. Sorry. Sorry, fans. Well, does this mean
you hate Exmo?
This means you're going to choose Mike as a favourite podcast person.
Rubbish. I try so hard.
That's a real letdown, Paul, because it's the first time anybody has ever failed. Anybody other than you. Yeah.
You dare us challenge.
Well, that moves us nicely on to the next challenge, which where we quickly had a thought about before starting the recording. And the best idea we could come up with is we're going to design our own geeky t-shirts.
Yay! Yes.
That's it. I guess that there has to be, yeah, geeky. I mean, I don't know. I suppose we should have some kind of Linux element in there. Paul had a really excellent t-shirt on yesterday.
Did I?
Yeah.
You oh, did. Yeah. Did I?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, Mr. T-Rex.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Explain the picture in words.
Yeah.
What did it say on it? Mr. T-Rex. It had Mr. T's head on a little dinosaur.
That's right. Which was funny.
It was excellent, yeah.
You had to be there.
It doesn't sound that funny now.
Mr. Stallman Rex.
So there you go. That's the idea.
I remember once a reader sent me a MicOS t-shirt, which was nice.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
If you listen to this live, you should look at the podcast notes before you listen to the podcast, because that way the joke will be funnier.
I might just cut that bit, actually. That whole Mr. T-Rex thing. So that's it. In 2 weeks' time, whatever it is, whether it's a big X on a t-shirt template,
or like
that
Mac
Effie
OS
can come up with.
and we can judge the winner by a number of sales of t-shirts.
Yes.
Mm, yeah, put them on Cafe Press.
Wow.
I
like
this idea.
This is an actual contest.
Yeah. With there's an actual reward for this one.
It may result in beer. Beer like this idea, yeah. Next time, it's designing a geeky mug.
Yeah. Mouse mug.
Now it's time for In the Hot Seat, at which point we will spin our fantastic, fantabulous, contribulatory of a wheel round to decide what topic Mike Saunders will cover for the next minute. But this episode, it's very interesting because you may be aware of Paul the Octopus has recently passed away. But before he did so, this last sort of tentacle outreach, he reached out and ate a mollusk next to the word Android.
Android.
I think that's got some sort of deep meaning for you, Mike.
Wow.
If you could talk for a minute, it would satisfy Paul Octopus's last wish.
I was hoping it was going to be about grub, but...
Yeah, well, grub was next to that. It was next to grub, Android, grub. So it's a sign of the octopus, realistically, that...
So should I get ready?
You've got to talk for a minute. Are you ready?
Android. I haven't actually spent that much time using Android. In fact, I've barely used it at all. But I am really happy that there is a Linux platform, a strong Linux mobile platform with a GUI designed actually for mobile computing that they haven't tried to shoehorn GNOME or KDE into there. So it's good competition for the iOS devices. It means there's a relatively free platform out there for people who don't like Apple's restrictions. But on the other hand, there's actually quite a lot of fragmentation in the Android market at the moment. You see some devices being launched that are still running just Android 1.6, whereas other devices are running Android 2.2, and this can be a problem for developers and when they want to support new features, whereas in general on iOS devices, users upgrade pretty quickly because they're peppered with alerts to tell them that there's a new version of the software available, whereas it's up to the individual handset makers to determine whether or not they should bring out a new version of Android for the machines. So I think if they can sort out the fragmentation problems, and they can make the user interface a little bit snappier and more refined and cover up a lot of the technical gubbins, then it will quite possibly be the mobile OS of the future.
Done.
Well,
fantastic.
That was very good.
You know how Cheers became Frasier and Friends became Joey? I think the Tux Radar podcast has become the Mike Saunders podcast.
Hi, fans. Joining me tonight.
And with such prediction, we come to the open ballot. Our question this time is, do you support Ubuntu's move to Unity? You already have figured out that Ubuntu, without the G, I guess, is the standard GNOME edition of Ubuntu. And they are jumping ship as of 11.04 using their own UI design called Unity. Designed internally. Originally, we saw it in, I think, the Netbook edition.
Yeah, Ubuntu Netbook Remix or edition has had this for a while. Yeah,
yeah, well, they're always working on it. I mean, I remember they did evolve it in 9.10, I think, to remove some of the features a little. Some of that fancy animation disappeared and stuff. So the question is this a fantastic move for Ubuntu to really differentiate it from other distros? Or is it a disaster area and may indeed fork people onto Mint or other distros? What do you think, team?
Well, it's a shell, isn't it? So GNOME's still there in the background.
It's still GNOME technologies underneath,
and
yeah.
Presumably, you can quit Unity like you can on the Netbook edition and you get back to GNOME.
Bring up a GNOME window as soon as you like.
Netbook is actually an option you choose. Give me Unity. Don't give me Unity. You don't quit it necessarily. It's,
right, okay. But there's still lots of GNOME in there. I mean, it's the Nautilus GTK. And all that stuff and GTK. And I think it's a good thing. The biggest problem, I think, with the desktop experience is that there's no kind of conformity or no chance for any one distribution to really make a mark on design and change things. And that's effectively what they're doing with Unity.
Yeah, I mean, I think they need something. The Linux desktops, well, I know KDE has been a bit more adventurous and demanding technologically, but, you know, a lot of people could look at a Linux desktop and say, well, it just looks like a kind of mixture of Windows and OS X. If it actually stands out to people and saying this is a unique experience and look at it, it can do X and Y better, then...
And that's the only worrying thing about it, in that having tried it and having tried it on Ubuntu just this week, there's nothing in it that makes me want to switch from a standard GNOME desktop to Unity's.
Really? You
in
don't fact, think that it's faster or simpler?
I know it's a long way off, the final release, but it's not going to work on my large 1600 by 1050 desktop, you know, with all the big applications down the left, which is basically the launch pad, which normally takes up only a small part of my screen, followed by a great big desktop that looks and should feel like my normal desktop, but isn't. It's the rest of the Unity desktop. I like the way that they're moving to... It's comp is as well, isn't it? They're switching window managers, yeah. And I like the fact that comp is becomes a fully-fledged window manager. But are applications going to run full screen? I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't spent much time...
Is it Maximus, the...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense on a netbook, but I just wouldn't want that for reasons we just said.
Would you like it on a tablet?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense on a tablet. That's a really good question.
Would you like it on a train? Would you like it in the rain? Sam, I am.
But yeah, tablets, that makes a lot of sense. In fact, there are demos of Ubuntu running Unity on a tablet.
It looks very touchable.
Yeah.
Touching my
screen. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Maybe that's what they're thinking.
So maybe in, you know, 12 months' time or something, when the first Ubuntu tablets come out that massively undercut the iPad...
Yeah,
they'll be running that, and they'll have had the chance to iron out all the glitches in Unity.
Yeah.
From putting onto Ubuntu 11.04.
Ah, it's you. Well, let's turn to our listeners. We've had a pretty fantastic response on the comments of the podcast about it. Celtic Boy says, "I think this is a really bad idea. A Unity can be installed if required, and I fear this move will see many move distro. Mint and Fedora will be the winners," which is quite true, I think. It may, because if Mint stays where it is and Ubuntu moves on and no one likes the new Ubuntu interface, well, where are they going to go? Banana Umarang says, "At first I was excited. I also heard that Compass was replacing Mutter, which is a good move. However, having read reviews so far, I don't like the idea of making it default at all. It's a mistake and only intended to increase Canonical's ownage of Ubuntu. It was designed for small screens, not an ordinary desktop. But I'm no fan of GNOME Shell either, so I guess I'll see how this turns out."
Evil Canonical trying to own its own distro.
What are they thinking?
Greg E. has an interesting point, which is the GNOME Shell is coming, and the GNOME we've had for so long is going to be no longer available. So it'll be Ubuntu or the GNOME Shell, but not traditional GNOME. I have Unity on my EPC 900, and I'm not impressed with the speed or the rough edges. The switch to Compass and 6 months more development might help. This is very interesting, because obviously GNOME Shell is coming out in the next release, around about the 11.04 release cycle period. So there will be a very clear choice. Do you like GNOME Shell? No? Well, that's the default. Where are you going to go? Maybe Unity is the answer. So it may actually result in a fork.
If the GNOME team have got any sense, though, they'll make GNOME Shell have a compatibility mode that almost looks identical to the old GNOME desktop.
Yeah, I expect, yeah. It should be optional. Well, obviously, the final choice hasn't been made just yet, but it'll be soon.
Well, but Unity is just throwing all that in the bin. I can see it's a big step. And I think, as with so many things with Linux, Canonical aren't trying to change anybody's mind in the people that have responded to the open ballot. They're after new territory.
Yeah, they're looking and at so the 98% of the market.
Yeah.
Well, you say that, but Miska says, "Just another example how Canonical don't want to contribute back to the open source and doesn't want all the Linux world to be at least a little bit coherent." And Popey says, "Like window button moves, dropping the GIMP and Aptitude from the default install, dodgy porno calendars and spatial windows, this will be yet another decision Canonical/Ubuntu make that will be forgotten soon enough, but dredged up by people leaving comments and blogs when the next change come around." Like this one. Yeah, there's a point somewhere in there, I'm sure.
That was a very good point as well.
Nye said, I really don't get why they haven't thought of changing it sooner, or at least make a new derivative. That being said, Unity does need some work, and if someone isn't willing to use it, I'm sure Gubuntu will work just as well as Kubuntu does today.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Good to see a Gubuntu.
Somebody register Gubuntu domain name now. Let's get working on it and make billions of pounds.
Yeah, well, I don't see why not. And also, it's nice that GNOME gets treated in the same tier as KDE for once. You know, as a KDE user, I suppose I'm not that bothered.
Look at the bitterness.
Our Mosses said, this is a brave move by Canonical. While upsetting the core users, it'll be great for new users like my partner and children. At the moment, I've set up a GNOME top panel with Docker at the bottom. This makes it easier for them to navigate and stops a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Presumably, if new users like it, great. If old users don't like it, they can just switch back to GNOME.
Yeah. I remember, was it a Windows version, like Windows Vista or something, where they changed the control panel. Maybe an XP, I'm not sure. They changed it. It used to be just a big list of icons. They changed it so it was in categories. And the old Windows users were like, where's it gone? I don't know how to find things anymore. And they all turn it back to the old sort of classic look and feel for the control panel.
Yeah, it's like the start menu. Yeah, there's a classic view for that as well.
So you're either an old user or you're a new user. You choose your design and go with it. So it shouldn't really be much of a problem. We had literally dozens of more comments.
About 80 at least, yeah.
I think so. Chen said, as a diehard KDE user and one that ditched Kubuntu recently for the abysmal treatment of KDE and Ubuntu, with a massive URL, which perhaps Graham can include, I really shouldn't give a damn. However, it gives me hope there might be an even larger group of annoyed people, that feel their favourite desktop environment doesn't get the love it deserves from Canonical. So he's kind of hoping that it's going to annoy GNOME users so much it'll drive them to KDE.
And then there'll be a meld of KDE and GNOME in which all the best bits.
Yeah.
And then the circle will be complete.
GNOME. GNOME is here.
Now there's an idea.
This is what it takes. Forking to provide will make unity. Peace brings war. Unity by Netbook says Rattus is extremely slow, unintuitive, restrictive, and a mess. I've gone back to enlightenment.
Whoa, that guy is hardcore.
Go respect. Rattus, we like you. Actually, should be a challenge, shouldn't it, realistically? We should all use enlightenment.
I'm waiting for 1.0 to come out.
Might be a little bit of
you're
a long
scared
time,
of the bleeding air.
Yeah. I don't trust it.
Palm Tree says, Unity? Absolutely not. The whole exercise is a waste of creative talent, a total waste. Unity is a massive brain fart.
Is it his creative talent that's being wasted?
Yeah.
No.
That's a shrug, listeners.
Yeah, it's sort of a meaningful, not really a French kind of shrug, more like who really cares kind of shrug. Tudsworth says, at the state it's in now, nope. Provided 6 months of development is enough to see the project mature a little bit. Right now, the whole thing feels incredibly clunky, to the point I use Ubuntu Desktop Edition on my netbook just to avoid Unity. Wow, it's that bad.
Whoa.
I've left it on my netbook. I think it works quite well. You know, I just want to launch applications rather than experience the desktop.
Yeah.
I think I still think, you know, the Linux desktop needs to have some innovation, and I don't know whether Canonical are the right people to do it, but I don't blame them for having a go.
History may.
Yeah, well, history may, but, you know, they're throwing the gauntlet down, and they must have known what kind of response they'd get from the community, both from their own community and from the Linux community. And, you know, despite all that, I think Mark and co have decided the only way we can see to actually push innovation forward on the desktop is by taking control of it ourselves. And this is the result.
I think the general feel of these comments is the word clunky appears many, many times. But also people saying, I've got Ubuntu on my netbook and ditched Unity in favor of standard sort of Nautilus stuff. So I'm not sure it looks promising at all.
No.
Perhaps I should have developed Unity a bit more before making this announcement.
Well, that's true. I don't think it looks promising in terms of what we might expect from Unity because of the reasons I've just said, especially on a desktop. But stir up the distribution market a little, maybe get Ubuntu off the top.
I expect Mint over the moon.
Yeah, well, Mint owes an awful lot to Ubuntu, but yeah, if they switch to Debian and, you know, keep the GNOME desktop, all power to them.
And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes.
Hey, right, this has been a quick podcast, but you're not going to be able to escape the one more thing.
I can still try.
You can try. Well, I put up a blog post on the Linux Format website the other day about open source project websites, and I went to SourceForge, and I want you guys to guess how many projects there are registered on SourceForge.
13,495.
Okay, I think it's going to be 140,000.
177,000.
Paul's closest. It's actually 260,000.
Oh.
Yeah. And how many of those are marked in the planning stage?
259,000.
100,000.
180,000.
48,000 of them are
That's pretty good.
Only 48,000 people have actually bothered to register a SourceForge page for something they're never going to complete, which is nice.
Maybe they're in planning.
It's a lot of buying.
Yeah. Maybe they are genuinely planning.
I think it's better to make some code first and then release it.
If Linux had less code and more planning, it'd be a better place. Let's not mock the planners. And with that sage advice, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes, once Graham has rendered them off the top of his head, will be on the website for you to read and enjoy for months to come. And we'll see you in 2 weeks, at which point we may have prepared slightly more. Bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day.